I'm so sweaty. How can I be this sweaty? This weekend, my cousin, a big shout out, I have to say, a shout out to my cousin Becky, who's been a faithful listener forever.
Forever.
She got married. She got married this weekend, and I couldn't be there, and it was really, really sad, but I got to FaceTime and talk to everybody, and she looked beautiful, and everybody looked like they had so much fun, and there's this amazing picture of all of my cousins without me, all of my cousins flicking off the camera, which is something our grandma does, which is our, just, it feels like fun family.
Love.
Love. Live, laugh, love.
I went to Rita's bungalow for
how was
day.
It?
It was so fun. It was so fun. It's the coolest place, and I cannot believe it's like all these houses, these tiny houses on a big piece of land where there's tennis courts and a clubhouse and a pool and no cars, and the kids can just run. Like, they like leave the house and like run, and you're like, where were you? And they're like, at the clubhouse. And like, we took them to the pool a bunch, and my kids both love swimming and were so happy.
Quinn.
I just had like the best time. It was like making food and drinking. It's like cabin camping life, and we slept like in one big room together with like, it was just, everything about it made me so happy. It felt so summer family vibes.
Does it make you want to buy a place
there? Memorial Day. Huh?
Does it make you want to buy a place there?
Listen, they're really cheap. They're like $100,000, but I don't have, I don't even have, $1,000.
Yeah, we don't have $1,000. So we're
but if I had money, it would be top of my list.
You know, I got to tell you, I got sent a little Zillow listing for a really cute house upstate New York, and I would love to, but similarly, money is an issue. It's a little tight.
It is fun. So, but Zillow's so fun. I mean, it's just an imagination playground for joy. Mm. And I, one day over the rainbow, I'm going to get my act together and I'm going to be a star.
Quinn, I can't wait for you to get your your master's in social work, your MSW. And this podcast is just going to really, because you're going to now bring some different psychological input to the podcast, as if we don't already. But this time you're going to have a degree.
You want to hear something kind of interesting?
I would like to hear something really interesting, but I'll listen to the kinda.
Well, we were at the bungalow, and you know, people just end up kind of, I felt so old, by the way, because they had a luncheon. They had like a meeting, you know, like everyone meets like a HOA kind of style. Mm-hmm. And then they catered it after, and we got to come eat their food because we were staying there. And Rita and I kept turning to each other going, it's a great spread. Look at this spread.
Quinn,
and
I was like, oh my God, I've been saying so that since old. I was 20. I've been saying that since I was 18
sandwiches.
Years old.
It was a great spread. And I just got into those
dips?
Boozy seltzers. I just got into, like,
you know. Okay, yeah. It's taken you a minute.
I'm late to the game.
You're late to the game.
Yeah,
you're
I wasn't sure at first.
What is it? It just feels like malt liquor to me, though. Like, what is it? Why do you like them? What do you like about them? Because
It's like you're having a spindrift. It's like you're having a spindrift, but then you just feel a little funny after. The best of both worlds.
So that's the fun.
That's what I like.
Okay. Duly noted.
So, well, you know, we're meeting all different people. And at one point in the evening, actually, a guy came by Rita's, because they all just go by each other's houses. Everyone's inviting each other for dinner. It's really sweet. And this guy came, and I met his mom. And she had had, she looks like, she's a grandma, but she's had a lot of work done. So, she didn't look like a grandma, but, I started talking to her. She was in the Hasidic community. Got married when she was 21 and had a baby, and then found out shortly afterwards that her husband was mentally ill. And so she was like, this is my life. I'm married to this mentally ill guy, and he won't give me a get, which, you know, a get is like where you're basically like, can I have a do-over? Can I maybe marry someone else? Can we not be partners? Like, it's like you have to ask permission
from the person you're trying to get away from.
Can I get a divorce? And then the man has to agree. So he was like, no, I'm not.
Because he's like, I'm not going to find anyone else. As soon as you tell everybody that I'm not okay.
So when her son was six, she was like, you know what? I'm just out of here, frankly. And she left the Hasidic community. And I was talking to her about that and what her life has been. And it's so wild. Like, I was like, so did you leave because of the marriage? And she's like, no, I actually left just because I wanted to experience so many things I wasn't going to get to do there. And then in talking to her about her life, she's like, well, when I was hiking the Andes, and you're like, yeah, she's like done all these different crazy treks through Europe and through South America, and like has all these wild stories about who she's met and what she's done. And
oh my God.
And anything we said, it just like, I like being around people like that too. Cause you're like, oh, you've just seen so much that I also can't shock you, which always feels comforting to me. Yeah. But it was great. I mean, I just getting to talk to her and like see what kind of life she's had and how much her son really looks up to her. And it was also a really happy ending because I didn't realize, I thought that in the Hasidic community, if you leave, I thought like you're so beyond scorned.
It's not like Amish. I think you're scorned. I'm sure there's people that are like, oh, that person. But I think you can still like go back.
But
and
she said she goes to events and she visits her family all the time and that they accept her for who she is. And she just has to wear the get-ups when she goes.
Oh, does she still have to wear a wig? I'm curious. But
that's what she said. She said she wears a wig. She said she wears a wig when she goes to like the big events and stuff, but that she lately won't wear a wig when she's around just her dad. And he got really mad about it. And she was like, actually, it was really interesting. She's like, now I visit my dad a lot more. I didn't when my mom was alive because she didn't like me. But now she's dead and I go visit my dad a lot. And he wants me to wear a wig. But I told him, I'm not going to. Look, I'm not married. And that's like what the belief is. So
yeah.
I'm not married. I'm not wearing a wig.
Good on her. That's amazing. By the way, did she answer the age-old question? What do female magicians wear?
Should have asked her.
So should have told her that story. But
if they wear what she wears, it's sort of like an Adidas skirt suit.
Fun.
Can you picture athletic wear?
Have you played pickleball yet?
No.
We got to play it. We got to play when I come in. I'm going to be back hit classes, July 1st.
I'll beat you.
Fuck.
Oh, you are? Going to stay here?
I don't know yet. TBD. TBD.
All right.
We'll see. TBD
and TDC. Welcome to Truly.
Truly. Darkly.
Creepily. I'm Quinlan Posner.
And I'm Carrie Ipama.
And you're here to hear some stories. Carrie will tell you one. Till our sponsors tell you one first.
Speaking of sponsors, do we have any Patreons to thank?
Well, Maria S. left and came back.
So here's the deal. We don't. The answer was no. And don't you miss the songs? Don't you miss the songs? Don't you want to hear a little song? Join Patreon so we can sing again.
We do have people to thank.
Fucking hell. I thought I was helping us. Son of a
sorry,
bitch.
But we do. Maria asks, we want to welcome you back. I don't know if we sang to her the first time she was a Patreon, so let's give Maria S. a song about coming back to Patreon. Okay.
Maria S., welcome back. You are here now because you left and then you came back. Did your credit card get changed and you didn't know? So then you had to re-sign up. That's happened to people before. Don't worry, you're not alone. Anyway, Maria S., I hope your card wasn't stolen. You just changed it because you lost it because you were having too much fun. And nobody stole anything from you, Maria S.
Maria,
welcome
Maria,
back.
Maria. Let's do Jordan.
Okay. Jordan is our next one?
Yeah, but it's spelled cool. Like
Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan.
Y-N-N-E.
Jordan. Jordan. Jordan.
Jordan.
Jordan.
Jordan.
Jordan.
Do you have a fin? Are you a fish that swims right into my heart? Do you make my dreams come true? Do you? Yes, you do. You fill my bank account. You fill my bank account with money.
You also fill our hearts with joy, and that's more important, right? Or is it because Quinn and I need money? Is that something we should be talking about on the podcast? I don't know if that's something we should be talking about on the podcast, but we are.
Jordan.
And you like our candid. Jordan.
The end. One more. Bella. Bella.
Oh my God. Bella.
Bella M. But let's just sing to Bella. Okay. Bella. Bella, you ring my Bella, and I come running because you're felon. My fella, Bella. And you don't even smell her. Did you just get out of the shower? Man, that's power. Look at you go, taking care of yourself, joining a Patreon, washing your body, doing all the things that make you feel naughty. Whoop, 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 ba-da-ba-da-bow. Bella.
What's amazing is when you get really high-pitched, I think it takes it out of it. Like, I can't even hear it because, like, yeah. You actually don't want to hear her get high-pitched.
I know.
It's Bella, like it's, I love that.
It's protecting you.
Bella, do you have an Edward or a Jacob in your life? Just let us know what kind of fella you got rocking on. Did you just smell your boobs?
No, I was blowing them, like, wait, sending, Quinn, like, an air journey.
Wait a minute. That's turned into a whole separate podcast. Quinn, you are blowing your
boobs.
We're
going to start charging you guys extra.
Is there anything I need to update you on? What did I do last week? Oh, my God. Well, the last time I talked to you, I did really hit my head. It's still tender. Where I hit my head. Is there anything else? No, that was 2 weeks ago. Okay. Hold on. I got to lean back. Lean back. All right. I'm going to tell you a story. And we're going to make it quick so that you can go to your dinner. That's fair. Okay. I got this information from ABC 2020, WNDU, Yahoo, maybe some other places, but I don't remember. I want to introduce you to Army Sergeant Tyrone Hassel III. That's right, the third. He is he enlists in the Army in 2015, or around 2015, but he enlists while he's in college. And while he's in the Army, while he's let me start over again because I got a little distracted. My arm, foot. Okay, we're back. Okay, I'm going to tell you the story of Army Sergeant Tyrone Hassel III. Tyrone enlists in the Army while he is in college. He wants to excel. He wants to get out of the town in Michigan that he's growing up in, and he wants to do better, and so he enlists in the Army. In 2015, he meets Kamiya. In 2015, he meets Kamiya. She's an Army specialist, and their relationship gets serious very quickly, as probably is pretty common in the Army. I don't know what it is about the Army. Do you know? I mean, you have a sister who served. Why do relationships go from like zero to marriage like that in the Army?
Because it's like, it's almost like a shared trauma or something. It's like it reminds me of, I don't know. It's
a showmance, like an acting.
First of all, it's not like you have a bunch of freedom and you're running around going a ton of places, meeting a ton of people necessarily. Yeah. Like, especially if you're doing like basic training or something like that, which she met her husband in the Army, or her, they're divorced, but she met him in the Army, and it was a very accelerated relationship, and they did everything together because you're not seeing a bunch of people that are not in the Army. It's now, your whole life.
Is this true? Because I don't know, but also when you're married, you have different benefits, and they're usually better benefits.
So that is true. I think that was part of their thinking. The housing was much better too. Yeah.
The housing is better. There's like a lot of things that like all of a sudden get upgraded. And if you care about someone, you're like, I'm going to get married. Let's go. So his family, Tyrone's family, is like, we heard about the relationship and then they were engaged. Like, we heard about it and they were engaged. Boom. It was very quick. And so they get married. Very soon thereafter they have a child together. Kamiya gives birth to their son. And by all accounts, both families approve of this relationship. The relationship with everybody is very good. Everybody is very happy. They are both serving in South Korea. And on leave, they are based in Fort Stewart, Georgia. So Kamiya is a truck driver and Tyrone is a wheel mechanic. So it's confusing. I don't know when they were serving in South Korea or when they're in Fort Stewart, Georgia. I think like their American base is Fort Stewart, Georgia, and then they serve over in South Korea. Sure. We're going to call that what it is. It's 2018 and Tyrone and Kamiya, they are on leave with their son and they're staying in Michigan at Tyrone's dad's place. It's in St. Joseph Township, Michigan. It's New Year's Eve. So Tyrone is going to a family party nearby while Kamiya is staying home with their 2-year-old son. My assumption is it's like New Year's, and so he's going to go out. She's staying at home with their son, which is very nice. And he is going to come back to bring her some food from the party so that she can have something, which, by the way, pro move, do that. That's great. So he comes back to bring her food. And while he's in his driveway, he's 23 years old. He is next to his car when someone comes up to him and shoots him multiple times at his father's home. He collapses. His wife hears the commotion. She comes outside. She sees him. He is unresponsive. He is riddled with bullets. She immediately calls 911, and she is absolutely frantic. The police arrive, and they recall her being totally emotionally distraught while her husband is dying from his injuries. They put him on the gurney. They're putting him in the ambulance. First responders on the scene recall her, like, pushing before them so that she could get in the ambulance with her husband. But unfortunately, tragically, he succumbs from the gun wounds and he dies. So the question is who killed him? What happened? So for the initial investigation, there's not much to go on. There's not surveillance anywhere, but they do have a neighbor nearby that saw a man get into a black car after the shooting. So that's all they have. And Kamiya at the time is absolutely devastated. His family recalls that she's sitting on the couch and she is just, like, absolutely distraught. She's not moving. She's not doing anything. She's just, like, numb. It's so horrifying. She is immediately cooperating with the investigation. She talks to the police multiple times. Everything is fine. At one point they go, did he have life insurance? But because they're married and they're in the army, she mentions that she's going to get, there's like a $400,000 life insurance policy out on him, which I don't think is uncommon when you're in the army. And they ask her if she knows anyone who wants her to hurt her husband or has any sort of motive to hurt her husband. And she says, no, she knows no one. And then 11 days after his death, the police get a tip from an anonymous woman. This woman calls the police and she claims that she has a son who is in the military and knows the couple. Mm-hmm. And this woman's son claims that she knows that Kamiya is in a relationship with another soldier.
Oh, shit.
On the same day as that call, two soldiers from Fort Stewart in Georgia, where Kamiya and Tyrone are stationed, two soldiers that same day come forward to the Army's Criminal Investigation Division with a fear about one of their friends, Specialist Jeremy Queller. He is also a truck driver on the base. If you recall, that's Kamiya's job. So one soldier approaches the Army Criminal Investigation Division, the CID, if you will, CID. One soldier approaches the CID and he says that he's aware of a relationship between Kamiya and Jeremy and that it was a complete secret from Tyrone. Tyrone had no idea this was going on. But now this friend, this soldier who's coming forward, says that he's worried about his own safety because he knows. And he knows a lot. So he's like, okay, I know these two are boning. I'm worried that I'm in trouble because I know too much. Mm-hmm. So the CID launches its own investigation and they start to get a bunch of people admitting and owning up to what was going on between Kamiya and Jeremy. One friend says that Jeremy had, quote, said that Kamiya Hassel was his girl and that Sergeant Hassel had to go, which is not really like what you want to hear before someone's death. They also go on to learn that another sergeant on the base sold Jeremy two guns before the shooting. One of the guns matches the caliber of gun used to kill Tyrone up in Michigan. Okay. The soldier who came forward and is like, I'm worried about what I know. I'm worried that I know that they're together. He wasn't being like fully transparent about how much he knows and how much his life is in danger, because it's very soon after this that they find out that not only did he know about the relationship, Jeremy also straight up told him that he killed Tyrone. I was like, yeah, be worried. Be very worried. Because you... He's telling
balls, you know?
Yeah. If he's telling you, his best friend, like, what he did after he shot him, he says that he's telling... Some guy was... Or what was it? Yeah. This is what the quote I saw was, the quote I got from one of the articles was, he's telling his best buddy on base what he did. After he'd shot him, he stood over him and put one in his head to confirm the kill. One of the shots, and that confirms one of the shots from that night, was directly in the forehead. So immediately the CID puts Jeremy under surveillance, and they search his car right away, where in the car they find ammo and a magazine that matches the ammo that was found at the scene of the crime. The CID then shares this information with Michigan police, who are also investigating this. I don't know how far you could have gotten without all of this stuff from the CID, but the fact that they're sharing it with the Michigan police is really great. So they share all that they know with the Michigan police, and in addition, they share the license plate number to Jeremy's car, and Michigan is able to, with like tolls and everything, they're able to find those plates, and they can put Jeremy's car in the same area as the scene of the crime when it happened. So he is arrested in Georgia 11 days. Jeremy Queller is arrested in Georgia 11 days after the murder, pretty quickly, but he refuses to speak with the police. Camilla, unbeknownst to her, she does not know that Jeremy has been arrested. She is brought in for questioning the exact same day in Michigan, which I have to say, very clever, well executed, everybody. So Camilla denies that she is involved with Jeremy, even though the police are like, we know you're involved with this guy. And she's like, you know what? No, I know nothing about this. That's not me. No way. No how. And then they're like, you know what? We need you to take a polygraph test. Mm-hmm. And she goes, sure. Okay.
Really?
So she takes this test. Fascinating. And it's very clear that she's lying. And so when they say, hey, you took the polygraph test, and we can confirm you are lying, even though, secret, they can't totally confirm
they can't.
That you're lying. Just let this be your PSA. They can't tell if you're lying. She's like, oh, I was lying. Okay, let me get interviewed again. And she gets interviewed again, and she confesses to her involvement in the plot to kill her husband. She admits
the affair.
Wow, she
really folded pretty
she
fucking
folds
fast, huh?
In the article, it's like, why was she
You're
even
like,
lying?
Whoa. Like, what's like, yeah, I thought I'd try.
So she admits the affair, and she gives details about her role in the murder. And then, just as an interesting anecdote, she and this guy, I think, meet when they were stationed in South Korea. And she admits to the affair. And she says, hey, listen, like, we actually didn't think we'd be caught because we spoke via Snapchat. And she's like, because the disappearing messages.
And we used really crazy filters. He was a potato and I was a skeleton. So we were sure no one would know. And they're like,
really,
oh, that's
like
not how that works.
That's actually not how that works, but I love that. I really love it. It's like someone being like, I did a Marco Polo and I didn't think anyone could ever watch it again. That's so crazy. It's recorded. The internet, it's like, I love when people forget how the internet works. Baby, it's all
too
permanent. Details, details, details. So, let me see, where was I? Oh, she also confirms that Jeremy not only was just in Michigan on December 31st, that he had gone to Michigan from Georgia four times between December 19th and December 31st to plan the murder. She ends up signing a document admitting to the plot to kill Tyrone, and she is arrested on January 12th, the day of Tyrone's funeral. The family... His family, when I tell you they are shocked, it is an understatement. This is a woman who they have taken care of for the past 12 days, who has sat in their home on their couch while they catered to her, while they took care of her, while they helped her grieve the loss of their family member, a man that died at her hands, essentially.
Yeah.
It gets worse. The stupidity gets worse. While she's in jail, she calls her mom. She admits to the murder again. She confesses what's happening to her mother on the phone in jail,
right,
where it is all recorded.
Recorded.
So, of course, it is used against her in a criminal trial. In addition to all this, of course, like as soon as she admits it, they put her in jail. And of course, as you probably know, because you listen to true crime, they have to build the case around her. So in addition to all of this stuff that I have, they have cell phone records showing that Jeremy and Camilla were talking in the hours leading up to the murder. Camilla's initial defense is that she was coerced into the murder plot. Jeremy says that Camilla called him and asked him to come back to the house when she confirmed with Tyrone that he was on his way back to bring her food. That's how he knew he was going to be there. Just think about that. Think about how fucking awful that is. This man is going, I'm going to bring you some food because you're home with the kid by yourself on New Year's Eve. And she's like, when are you going to be here? 5 minutes. She hangs up with her husband. She calls her lover and she's like, hey, he's going to be here in 5 minutes. Come and kill him. Shocking.
Cold-blooded.
Cold-blooded. Just for life insurance, $400,000. And this guy, it's so gross. July 18th, 2019, she is convicted of first-degree premeditated murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. She is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Meanwhile, Jeremy pleads guilty to second-degree murder, so he's not even at a trial. He just pleads out. He pleads guilty to second-degree murder, and he is sentenced to 65 to 90 years in prison. Later, he requests to withdraw his plea, but Michigan Supreme Court denies to hear his case in 2021. So he's still in prison. He's there. Jeremy, while he's in prison, asks to speak to Tyrone Jr. Tyrone, the victim's father.
Mm-hmm.
It is on 2020. They show part of the conversation where this murderer is talking to the father of his victim, and he admits that it took him 6 times to try to kill his son, right? He kept leaving and coming back to try and kill this person, mm-hmm. but he kept chickening out. But on mm-hmm. his 6th time is when he eventually killed Tyrone. And I gotta say, this father is, it's so heartbreaking. They mm-hmm. interview him for 2020 for this episode, and it's so sad. It's just so heartbreaking. And the fact that this father had to listen to the person who took his son away from him tell him this, I'll never understand. Camilla, while she's in prison for life, she also tried to appeal based on what she calls ineffective assistance of counsel. So in her appeal, she claims that her lawyers failed to pursue a defense of battered partner syndrome, but her conviction was affirmed by the Michigan Court of Appeals. Let's put this into perspective. She had this man killed. She could have divorced him, but instead she wanted the $400,000 payout. In addition, after he's gone, she now says in an appeal that was never brought up during the case, that she had battered partner syndrome, and that's what drove her to kill him. There is no evidence of that I could find, and it feels like, how dare you besmirch this man's name who you killed. Now, Tyrone and Camilla's son, who is named after his father, Tyrone IV, he lives with Camilla's mom, and he does get to FaceTime with Tyrone's parents. But when Tyrone's dad is interviewed in 2020, he talks about how proud he was of his son and how even though he's gone, he won't ever stop talking about him. And he says, when you come from where we come from, you don't have a child that succeeds to that level. And there's a lot of love there and there's a lot of loss. And fortunately, the murderers are behind bars for a crime that feels so senseless and
mm-hmm.
in cold blood. So that's the story of Sergeant Tyrone Hassel III.
I am going to tell you a story, and it's about Heather Miller, and I got this from Pop Sugar in an episode of Snapped. You're going to love how this starts. So I don't know if you're aware of this, Carrie. Actually, I fucking do know. In 1998, Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman made a little rom-com, didn't they?
Practical Magic.
You bet your booty. You bet your fucking booty. And they, you know, they learn how to cast spells. I guess like their crazy aunts taught them, right? And
Stockard Channing. There was
a curse Stockard that was Channing. On them.
Yes. Well, I don't know. Right? We looked back. Have you we looked back at what episode? If you follow our podcast.
Oh, yeah. Carrie pranked me once by telling the story of Practical Magic as her story. So I'm doing the same to her, but different with a twist. So this is a real story, but I did, for and those that say, don't know Practical don't know, Magic.
It was so good. And Quinn really believed it fully and totally and wholly. And it was fucking incredible.
So.
Quinn, were your headphones in the opposite ears that whole time?
Yeah.
And I was like, that must have been so uncomfortable.
So painful. And I'm pouring sweat. I mean, I just don't know what my problem is. I actually do. It's that I over-imbibed last night at the clubhouse, and now I'm like pouring. Like, I think seltzer's coming out of my spiked spindrift is coming out of my pores. The men that they fall in love with will die is the curse, and so they have to find a way to like come together and fix it. 5 years before this masterpiece has been made. Heather and Kevin Miller meet in 1993. They're working as a server and a manager at a seafood restaurant together in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Kevin's deal is that he used to be a Marine. He has a degree in accounting, so he works, of course, at a seafood restaurant. And Heather is a single mom. She's got a daughter from her previous relationship, which was not a great relationship. It was abusive. And so she's there, meets Kevin. They are like... they like see each other and are like, you. They get married just 2 years later and they have a baby together and they get a townhouse in Richland Town. But right after they get the townhouse and she's pregnant or they've just had this baby, he loses his computer consulting job, which is how he was mainly making his money. It wasn't the seafood restaurant. And she's like, ooh, is this a bad time to tell you I'm pregnant again? They will have 4 children together.
Ooh.
Either way, it's a lot of kids in a house that they can't afford because he's lost a job. So it feels like they get really tense and he has to start working a lot to make sure they can afford everything. He has an 80-hour work week and 2 jobs and he's not home and he's not helping with the kids. So they have just a very tense relationship where the neighbors are hearing them scream at each other. And speaking of the neighbors, she gets really close to the other moms in the neighborhood. It's a vibe of let's all have like coffee at somebody's house and bitch about our husbands. And I get that.
You
this
get
neighborhood
it, yeah.
does that too. She meets Mindy, who becomes sort of a bestie of hers. And they all like are these stay-at-home moms that are chatting it up and being like, we need a break. Mindy even babysits for Heather sometimes so she can just fucking take a break because being home with all those kids is crazy.
Yeah.
Her first husband was abusive. Now she's in another relationship that's not a... I don't think it was abusive, but he yells at her. Like, they fight. Mm-hmm. He takes out his anger on her because he's exhausted. And he comes home from work, and I think they're both just, like, picking fights with each other.
Right.
So she's thinking, I want to get out of this, actually, but I can't because I'm not working. I don't have any money. I don't have money to get divorced. She goes to a shelter and finds out like, she can't go there because he's not abusive, basically. Or he's not at least physically abusive. So she's like, I've got to get out of this situation. And to distract her and have a little fun, her friend Mindy, who is Wiccan, is like, I love magic. But you know what else I love? Practical Magic. Let's watch this great movie that I love. And they watch it. And for those that don't know, there's this scene where Nicole Kidman's character falls in love with this guy, Jimmy. But he becomes physically abusive. Mm. And then Sandy is trying to help Nicole get out of the relationship and they get kidnapped or something. And then Sandy puts belladonna, which is a poisonous, it's like deadly nightshade. She puts it in tequila and he drinks it and dies. Am I getting that essentially right?
Yeah, the kidnapping part I'm a little hazy on, but it's a great movie. You should watch it. It's a really peak 90s chick flick, super fun.
Well, they have a great time watching it. Heather's like, this is, thank you for showing me this.
But also
what
a little
film.
Triggering. A little
what
triggering.
A story. For sure triggering, but it gives her some good ideas because like it's super fun to have a friend that's Wiccan and to watch this magic movie where women come together to use their magic. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I'm going to go to this new agey store, Blessed Bee, and buy me like a potion to fix this problem. No, she buys, she does like, gets like a black magic kit to like, she gets a banishment spell to banish him from her life. And she goes to a lake, like, and like howls at the moon and throws things in a lake and like does whatever the kit tells her. And then she's like, what? Because when she comes home, guess what? Yeah, it didn't work. Can you believe?
She didn't believe in herself enough. I hope she got
her money back.
I don't think there's any money guarantee, unfortunately, with spells.
Right. Well, Mindy's like, you know, maybe you should get like a restraining order. I mean, like a real banishment thing instead of a banishment spell. And she's like, I actually have a better idea. I think I'm going to do the movie thing. And she's like, what do you mean? And she's like, that Belladonna thing, I'm going to get that and I'm going to kill him like in the movie. And I'm going to put it in his mashed potatoes. That's what I'll do. And she's like really telling everybody about this. She tells her babysitter, you know what? My husband is worth more to me dead than alive. He's got like, you know, like $750,000 might come to me in life insurance if I just get rid of him. She's like just telling people this stuff. And she's like, I know what I'll do. So I'm going to send him to work with this bowl of mashed potatoes that's poisoned. And then I'm going to call his office a bunch. So it looks like I'm like, Kat, where are you? And then I'm going to show up there, see that his car's there. And
she's
then I'm going
to
be like,
this to the babysitter. This poor babysitter is like, now I just
she's
want
telling,
my money
she's
and
telling
go.
This to Mindy. She's telling this to Mindy. She tells Mindy the whole plan. And she's like, it'll look like he had a heart attack. This is a great idea. So 2 years after the amazing movie Practical Magic was made in the year 2000, it has been mere weeks since Heather has seen it and obviously very affected, goes to her local health food store, gets her some Belladonna caplets in the homeopathic section. And she's like checking out and she's like, hey, I'm actually interviewing for a job and I just want to make sure like they can't tell if you've had these, like if they test your blood or like anything, because I just want them for sleep or whatever. But I just also am maybe going to have to get like drug tested. And they're like, because she knows there'll be an autopsy. And they're like, no, it wouldn't come up. And she's like, great, 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 perfect. So she takes the 100 pills.
Oh, my God.
The 100 homeopathic pills, crushes them up, puts them in a vial, and then goes to her neighbor Diane's house. Because I think that she's getting signs from Mindy that Mindy is like, I don't know if this is the way. I don't know if you should do this. So she goes to Diane, who she doesn't know that well. Imagine they're like casual acquaintances. And she's like, hey, Diane, I'm going to poison and kill my husband with this. I'm going to put it in his mashed potatoes. But I don't want him to find it before I'm ready to do that. Would you just hang on to it for me? Thank you so much. And Diane's like, what? She's like,
it sounds like
truly,
she's not well. It sounds like this is a person who's profoundly unwell.
Her lawyers will argue later that going to Diane's house and doing this is so wackadoodle-doozers that it was a cry for help. And it was basically being like, don't let me do this. So she Diane doesn't, which is to say she doesn't do anything that night, which is a little alarming because who knows how wacky your neighbor is. She might have killed him that night a different way. But she calls Mindy and she's like, Mindy, you're not going to believe this.
And Mindy's like, this wait, is this did she story. Come over and bring Belladonna? And she's like, yes.
Well, and then Mindy's
you know?
Like, oh, I do know she's planning to do that. And so Diane's fucked. Like, what? You know? And Mindy's like, yeah, I don't think we should go to the police, though. And she's like, I really do. And Mindy's for some reason doesn't want to. And Diane's like, we have
girl code.
To.
Girl code. It's girl code. Mindy takes girl code. Really seriously.
Too serious, Mindy.
And as a Wiccan, she like is like a priest. It's like confessional when she's always around her. She's not entitled to go at all.
It's her best friend. They do go to the police and they explain everything. And not only that, Mindy agrees to wear a wire and to get Heather talking about it.
Wow.
So there's a pretty wacky tape of them talking where Heather's, you know, Mindy's trying to bait her and say things like, are you still going to go through with it? And she's like, oh, yeah. And then she's really just saying everything on tape. She said, I'm making it tonight. And she says, well, do you think he's going to taste it? Like, are you worried about that? And Heather's like, oh, no, I'm putting a lot of Eastern turmeric in it. He's not going to taste it. It's going to be perfect. The next day, knock, knock, knock on Diane's door. Heather's there. She's ready to poison her husband. And she's like, I'm just here to check on that pill stash. And they arrest her and she ends up while she's arrested, they go tell Kevin and they're like, just so you know, your wife was planning to murder you. She's been arrested. And he's like, oh, I don't want to press charges. They're like, what? And they're like, it's not up to you. Like, it's murder.
He's like, because and I'm killing like, her. I'm going to kill her.
And he's like, I just feel so bad that I made her that mad that she wanted to kill me. So when she goes to trial, he shows up with her in court holding her hand, like totally on her side and being like,
okay, God, that was wacky. This is weird.
Her defense is that Mindy came up with the whole plan. And like, Mindy's the Wiccan. It was Mindy's idea. That's why Mindy didn't want to go to police. Mindy was like, you should kill your husband. And what they find out that gives Mindy a pretty weird motive is that they were sexually involved with each other. Mindy and Heather were sexually involved with each other.
Oh.
They started fooling around a while back. And at one point, when Mindy's talking about this on the episode, she's like, yeah, and at one point, I guess I was just going through a bad girl phase, so I would invite, like, younger men in the neighborhood to join us. And it just sounds like they were doing a lot of orgy situations. And
this is incredible.
It gets so absolutely unhinged.
This is so wacky.
Absolutely unhinged. I mean, so, and I want to give you this side note that comes up in court as part of the defense.
Here's what I love is, like, they go to trial, and, like, it's a clear open and shut case. Like, this woman is like buying Belladonna, whatever, watching Practical Magic. Like, we see it. But what I'm obsessed with is that the defense is like, I know what will get you off. It's that the Wiccan and you fooling around. Like, it just feels like, oh God, the poor jury of their peers, the like conservative Christians are like, it definitely was that sexual Wiccan lady. This is unhinged.
It's so on. So she also, in court, it comes up, the pills. And it's this, like, they're homeopathic. So they were like, just so you know, if he had taken 100 of those pills, he might have had indigestion. It wouldn't do anything to him. God. Like, they're homeopathic. Like, there's no way it would have killed him.
I was going to say, there's no way that you could buy 100.
It wouldn't have even made him very sick.
100.
No, they wouldn't do sell that over the counter, like a poison like that. Anyway, it's just, it's very funny that, like, they're basically like, what is this? Is this a call for help? Is she this stupid? Like, she goes to this woman's house and is like, hold it for me. She's telling everyone. There's just so much about it that's odd. But, of course, she did do all these things. So she is found guilty and she's sentenced to up to 10 years in prison. And he keeps visiting her. He'll go once a week and he's loyal. And then she's like, wow, you're really showing me you care. And she tells People magazine, in one aspect, I love him for it, but in the same breath, he must be completely insane. I'm like, you both are. And then she says, this shows me he actually truly does love me. For the very first time, I can say that I feel loved. So this is what it took. And I'm so sorry to report that this marriage does not work out when she gets out of prison.
Wait,
they
what?
Actually do. Yes. She's only in prison 5 years.
That's disappointing.
She comes out. They get back together. They've got their family. And they do, unfortunately, get divorced. And Kevin says of the divorce, all marriages go through difficulties. Ours just went to an extreme.
Some people go through midlife crises and buy a new car. Some people go to the local Whole Foods and buy some gas.
Belladonna.
Belladonna and try to kill you. You know,
here's the thing. What I'm really disappointed in is that there's not a movie based on this called Practical Murder.
Well, I think you just
pitched Impractical Murder.
Yeah, I would say it's more impractical. I would say Practical Murder.
Impractical Murder.
Like, actually, there's some substance. This is just like a lot of dum-dums. Can I ask where they're from? Where is this happening?
Oh, who could remember? Pennsylvania.
Yeah. No offense to you, Pennsylvania.
Quakers, am I right?
Quakers. You have to go.
The headline is, I got to go get pizza now, and I'm so sweaty that I think if I get away from you in this moment.
This is like the fastest episode we've ever done.
I'm proud of us.
It's going to be like 30 minutes.
Listen, I think everyone listening agrees that it's more important I get pizza than
that we talk
for 10 more
minutes. I love you. Join Patreon. Like, subscribe. Quinn, I love you. I'll talk to you soon. Have fun. Tell the boys I say hi.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
The Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.